There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, welcome aboard FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for live local talk over the next couple of hours. And, of course, you can stream us online at fmtalk1065.com, where you can find 54 hours a week of live local programming in podcast form as well. Get that there, plus three big things, all those things on our website. Of course, you can download, you can subscribe to get our downloads at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, all those. And remember, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And lots to do on today's show. And without delay, bring on our first guest. And the guest, I want to say this. It's been on this show many, many times. I wish I had he probably is like, yeah, Sullivan, a lot of times as I've leaned on our Congressman, Bradley Byrne, to be on with us. And history of Congressman Byrne, of course, serving in the Alabama State Senate and then working with the State Board of Education and the Chancellor of Alabama Department of Post-Secondary Education, a lot to talk about from that point. And then there was this special election for the 1st Congressional District of Alabama, when Joe Bonner stepped down. And y'all remember that, the primary in that, and Congressman Byrne was on with me then as candidate, Bradley Byrne, and went through that process and winning in a runoff and became AL1's congressman and has been serving us since January of 2014. Now, with just a few days left in his term, he's joining us now to talk on Midday Mobile for, I don't know, Congressman, maybe the 35th, 45th time, something like that.
I haven't kept count, but I've enjoyed the times I've been on the show, Sean.
Yeah, I've enjoyed our conversations as well. And I was thinking today, taking notes, all the different things we've talked about over the years, and we'll visit some of those. I do want to get your conversation with you on what's going on right now in these last few days of your time as AL1's congressman with the COVID relief bill, with the NDAA, with the president's veto of NDAA. Let's talk about spending. I mean, you were a yes vote, right, on the COVID relief and the spending package, right, the $1.4 trillion.
I was.
And your feelings on that? I mean, there were many Republicans. The majority of Republicans did vote for it. Some did not. Did you have any debate on whether you should or shouldn't?
Oh yeah, absolutely, I did. The problem with these big omnibus spending bills is that it funds all of government in one big thing, and there are bound to be things in there you don't like. I mean, there's no way for them to put some of those things together that doesn't have something there I don't like. But what you have to do is go through and say, does the good outweigh the bad? And remember, they stuck the COVID relief bill in the funding bills. It was all one big bill. So if I voted against it, I was voting against the COVID relief bill. I voted against it. I was voting against defense spending, I feel very strongly about. So we sat down, my staff and I did. We weighed the pros and the cons and decided that the pros outweighed the cons. I think this economy needs the help from the COVID relief bill, and I think it needs it now. I don't think we can wait on it. And so I decided to vote for it. Oh, there's some things in that bill I don't like. Yes, sir. But you get those great big bills in Washington, that's what you have to deal with.
Yeah, in compromise and the sausage making in Washington, often you will have to vote for a bill that will have things that are against your philosophy. But quite often that moves into just things that are obvious who they're serving. You see what I'm saying? It's not just like, hey, that's not a conservative principle, but it's a, why the heck is somebody at this point when we're trying to, like you said, write this economy, do all these things, going to put something that's flagrant in? And that comes from Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. people use a must-pass bill like that to try to put other stuff in. Now, the most egregious stuff we were able to keep out. For example, they had all sorts of things in there that were pro-abortion, and we kept all that stuff out. They wanted to put a bunch of money in that COVID relief bill to go bail out a bunch of blue states and cities. We kept that out. So we got a lot more wins than we got defeats. But, you know, there's stuff in there I wish we weren't paying for. I mean, you know, in the funding bill, not the COVID bill, in the funding bill, there's money for the Kennedy Center. The Kennedy Center got money out of the last COVID bill, which they shouldn't have gotten. And so I think we should have just said, all right, you've already gotten your money. We're not going to give it to you anymore. But that's part of the funding process that they put that in there. So, I mean, and that's been true every year we've had these omnibus bills. You say, why is that in there? But do I vote against all this other good stuff because they put some junk in there? The answer is you just have to go through each one and weigh each one as they come. Now, there's some really important stuff in there for this area. For example, there's money in there for Austal Shipyard to build another EPF. And so in and of itself, that was an important reason to me to continue to support it. We also have funding in there for what we've got to do to deepen the ship channel. So, you know, there's important stuff from the national level, important stuff from my district level. You just have to weigh it all out. And at the end of the day, it was my judgment. It was better to vote for it than against it. And most Republicans came to that conclusion.
That is true. I want to talk about specifics here. Well, what, because you mentioned a lot of things I want to get into later in our conversation, but let's do this one. This is the probably one of the most chatted about parts of that bill so far, and that has been, even though it's just one part of it, but it's, I guess, what gets people's attention, the check, right? The check amount and the deliberations here between zero and 4,000. Now we're talking about, you know, then it was 600. Now it looks like it's 2,000. Can you talk about the debate that you had or that Republicans had about that amount?
Well, up until the last few weeks, the amount from the Republican perspective was zero. We weren't going to do any stimulus checks. But in the negotiation to get a bill, the president said, no, I want to get stimulus checks out there. So we said, okay, Mr. President, if that's what you want, then we'll start talking about an amount. His representative in those negotiations was the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin. And the Sunday before we voted on that bill, was it a week ago, he was on a conference call with every House Republican member, and he said the deal is $600. And like most Republicans on that call, said, okay, that's the deal. That's what the president's representative negotiated. That's what we're going to do. Let's go with it. And we didn't know until last Tuesday night when the president tweeted out his video that the president didn't agree with that. We didn't know that.
At no point did Mnuchin say the president wants it to be 2,000.
No, he never did. Now, I knew the president wanted more than 600, going back to things he had said weeks ago, months ago. But, you know, in these negotiations, you go back and forth, you get back and forth, you don't get all you want. And my assumption, I think everybody's assumption was, hey, his negotiator, Steve Mnuchin, negotiated for him, and this is what they agreed to do. And, you know, I'm not in that room. I'm not doing those negotiations. I take Mr. Mnuchin's word for it, and I say, that's what the president's deal is. Let's go. We all voted for it. Now, last night in the House, they've amended that law, and they can do this retroactively, to increase it from 600 to 2,000. I didn't vote for that, Sean, and let me tell you why I didn't vote for that. We couldn't even get a Congressional Budget Office score on it for how much it costs. But we had some of our people on the House Republican side do some calculations, and we think it's an extra $400 to $500 billion.
Billion.
Another $500 billion. And we're borrowing every penny of that. We're borrowing every penny of what we've spent in all these different COVID bills. We're borrowing every penny of it. At some point, you got to ask yourself a question. How are we going to pay all this back?
I ask that question all the time, and it seems like people aren't interested from either side of the aisle. I mean, you are, but I mean, we brought in, what, $3.4 trillion into the Treasury for the year, but the spending is at $6 trillion. You know, I'm no math magician here, but I see the deficit.
Right. Well, we knew we were going to have to do deficit spending to get money out there last spring when we passed the CARES Act. Okay, and that was much bigger than what we're talking about here. And so we were sure that we were going to have to deal with that, and we did. And we knew going into this negotiation that we would be borrowing this money. And of course, we are. And we all kind of bit the bullet on that when we voted on it a week or so ago. But when you get something like we got from Nancy Pelosi last night that adds yet another $500 billion on top of that, at some point you draw the line in the sand and say, that's enough, no more. And most Republicans voted against it. Virtually all the Democrats voted for it. And it passed, and it's over in the Senate waiting whatever the Senate's going to do with it, which I really have no idea what they're going to do with it.
Was that a gift from President Trump to the Democrats, what he had said about the 2000?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Nancy Pelosi jumped on that with both feet. Oh, this is wonderful. Because she got her head handed to her in these negotiations and looked pretty bad. And then, boom, now she gets to be the big hero on the $2,000. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's playing out as a huge issue in the two Georgia Senate races. So, she was just in hog heaven last night with this thing out there.
Hey, help me. This is not about politics here. This is about just educating me. I asked this question this morning. I was asking it yesterday as well. If 600 versus 2,000, I think I went off on a little rant and said, well, why not 4,000? Why not 8,000? Why not 10,000? Why not $100,000? What in the stimulus check? Is there an index of why it's 2,000 or why it's 600? I mean, I look at what the spending power of a dollar is in Mobile versus San Francisco versus New York. Is there an index? Does the number just, no. You just dream up the number?
No, it's the result of negotiations.
But what is the index? Is it based on something or is it just, hey, no. This seems like a good number?
No, it's what, there were people that said zero and there were people that were saying higher than 2,000. And what everybody did was negotiate to the $600 point. That's how these things get done. And, if you add the 600 to the 1,200, now this is per person, not per family,
mm-hmm.
The 1,200 plus the 600 now, that means in the space of 9 months, we sent it to every qualified person in the United States $1,800.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We have never, ever, ever sent that much money out. Even in the depths of the Great Recession, we weren't sending money out like this. So this is unprecedented. Now, I get it. We're in an unprecedented situation with this pandemic. But at some point, you got to say, how are we going to pay this back? And I think we've gotten to that point.
Well, I think we're, that may just be the icing on the cake of that question. But so it is just straight negotiation from zero to whatever number. It's not, it didn't start off with an index of average American earning there wasn't like the starting place was this because of this calculation. It was just, here's some numbers.
Yeah, I think that I think it was like most people would agree that the real negotiation were the people that didn't want to do any, and the people that wanted to do another round of $1,200. Well, what's the midpoint between zero and $1,200?
Mm-hmm.
$600.
Right.
So my guess is that when they got into the actual negotiations, they just ended up at the midpoint, which happens. So, no, I don't think there's any magic to the number other than that's the way the negotiations played out.
All right. Coming back, more with Congressman Bradley Byrne. After 6 years, January 3rd will come the end of his term as our congressman. We continue our conversation about what's happening right now and some retrospective as he looks back on his time in Congress. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. And a continued conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. Very interesting intracameral discussion I was having with the Congressman, I think that's right, about COVID cases and votes for being the Speaker. What's going on, Congressman?
Okay, so this Sunday, when the new Congress begins, under the Constitution, their first order of business is to elect a Speaker. But there are no rules because the rules for the old Congress go out with no Congress. So that proxy voting rule that they passed earlier this year is gone. And so you have to be there physically in the chamber to vote for the speaker. I was told last night when I was there voting that two Democrats have tested positive this week, which means under our protocols, they cannot come into that building. They have to go quarantine. So she's down two votes, and she's already got a majority of about six. And three of her members have already said they're not going to vote for her.
Ooh.
One more member, and she can't get elected speaker, assuming we get all of our folks there.
And that means what
that
was
means
attempted.
We can elect a speaker.
Well, I mean, what was attempted before to push her out as speaker by the folks even left of her, I guess, or the new kids on the block, that may happen.
It might. I doubt it, but it might. And it just shows the perils that she's facing in this next Congress with such a slim majority. You know, for example, I mean, she's got some members that are going to be leaving to be in the Biden administration. Well, that's an empty vote. So, and she's got a number of her swing state folks that aren't happy with her right now. So I predict over the next 2 years they're going to be, you know, these sort of running battles. And the Republicans will take advantage of it, as they should, to try to, you know, whittle down on what she's doing. So I Sunday's going to be, I told one of my colleagues last night, I may get a couple of six-packs of beer and sit around in my den instead of watching NFL football, watch C-SPAN.
And actually, you'll be watching it like somebody that played football now, watching the football games. You'll be watching it with that inside knowledge, which is kind of leads me into a lot of questions I have stacked up kind of retrospectively. What your perspective of Washington? Obviously, you were in government beforehand at the state level, but your perspective of Washington, how's that changed over your time in Congress, or has it?
Well, I came to Congress with, like, extremely low expectations, very, very low expectations. And I was surprised when I first got there that things were better than I was prepared for them to be. And then over the last 2 years, they have dramatically worsened because of Nancy Pelosi's leadership in the House. I mean, she has been a real negative force in Washington. And as a result, this Congress that goes out at noon on Sunday is the least productive Congress since the 1970s. So it just goes to show how these elections matter, because the different people you have running the show produce different results. But I will say this, despite that, I think a lot of progress has been made in this nation on some key fronts over the last 7 years that I've been in Congress. I mean, the fact that we've been able to turn around the defense posture of the country, the fact that we've been able to turn around our ability to leave more money out there in the private sector with our tax reform, the success of the deregulation efforts. I can tell you, if we hadn't done a lot of that stuff before COVID, I think our ability to recover economically would be substantially impeded. So I think that despite all that, we've made some progress. So I'm actually, and I've said this a dozen times over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I actually leave Congress hopeful and optimistic. Now, that doesn't mean we don't face some difficult problems. And that doesn't mean that there aren't challenges with people like Pelosi out there. But I got to tell you, I think this country is a very strong country. And I think we are able to withstand a lot of this stuff a lot better than I thought we were.
Talk about that and who was in the White House. And you know, I remember us talking about it and negotiating how you can help AL1 when we had President Barack Obama. That you have President Trump. What is the, as you look at it, was it easier, and you can probably quantify what easy meant, but was it easier to do your job when it was Barack Obama in the White House or when it was Donald Trump in the White House?
Oh, it's harder because with a few exceptions, and I'll get to those in a minute, a few exceptions, they were not responsive to me and or to any Republican. Now, the exceptions were the Secretary of Transportation under Barack Obama, who was very helpful in all the stuff we were doing on the bridge, and the Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, who happened to be a former governor from Mississippi, who was extremely helpful with all things we were doing at Austell. But since President Trump's been in office, I mean, I called the White House, and, you know, I have multiple people I know to call on the White House, and they're extraordinarily good about calling me back, trying to help. And we saw that in the aftermath of these two hurricanes. Or if I need to go to one of the departments or agencies. And it would happen under President Trump that secretaries of labor, secretaries of education, sub-cabinet people would just pick a phone and call me and say, we need to get your perspective on this, or we just heard X. Can you tell us what that means? Well, I mean, that just didn't happen under Obama. So having President Trump in the White House was a godsend to me and so many of the things that I was doing. And I'm very grateful to him for all that. And he has this particular love and affection for Alabama in general and this part of Alabama. And I wasn't hesitant to play on that. And it worked. Trust me, it worked.
We're coming right back. More with our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne about the years in Congress. And now as his term comes to an end on the 3rd, we will look back at those years and talk about some of the big ones he named. A lot of the subject matter that we're going to talk about, whether it's military, I point out that if you went back to the podcast way back when, there was one person that was consistently talking about China, paying attention to what the Chinese military was doing. That was our Congressman Bradley Byrne. We'll talk about that. Committee assignments over the years. We'll talk some Red Snapper. You know I can't leave it there. And some I-10 Mobile River Bridge. It's all straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5 and continuing our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. Last few days of his time as our congressman, and I'm looking back as well on his career in Washington so far. Congressman, we talked about this during the break, so let's talk about this as well. When do you see as just Bradley Byrne, a guy from South Alabama, and Bradley Byrne, congressman that sees things at a higher level or gets more information, when do you see us turning a corner on the pandemic? When do you have any idea if you had to pick a month, pick a time of year?
Yeah, I think that we'll have enough people vaccinated by the end of June that there will be a pretty widespread return to what I'll call a new normal, because I don't think that a lot of the hygiene things we're doing now will end. And I think certain rules about whether you can come to work when you're sick or not will continue. But, you know, I think we'd have a pretty normal school year next year, for example. And I think a lot of the concerns we had early last summer about people going to the beach, I just don't think we're going to have those. So this vaccine is a game changer. All the public health professionals told us it was a game changer. And they told us that, and they told us it would take us 3 years to develop the vaccine. We almost all passed out. Well, lo and behold, the American system does what the American system does so well, which is we understood what needed to be prioritized. Congress put a heck of a lot of money into it. And now we're going to have the vast majority of the people in America vaccinated, you know, by midsummer.
All right. That's you and I were talking before then, but we'll talk again midsummer and look at those numbers. I want to talk about your time in Congress and some of the bigger things that stand out to me, and obviously open up time for you to tell me what they were through your eyes. But first, I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project. You and I don't know how many times you and I talked about this before anything got moving, during the debates here in the state, and also in the aftermath. So what happened? What happened from your position in Washington? What happened at a state level? Educate us.
So I got to Congress 7 years ago, and I knew this was a major issue down here. And the major issue at that point in time was we didn't have an environmental impact statement, which was one of the preconditions to getting all the federal approvals. So I got all the different players, state, local, and federal, together at the AIDT building on the causeway, got us all in a big room, said, all right, where's the holdup here? And it turned out to be the guy that's with the Federal Highway Administration assigned to the State Department of Transportation in Montgomery. And so I said, what's the deal? And he said, well, we're working on it. We're going to have it done in 2 months. And it had taken him 13 years before that point in time. And I said, why should I trust that you're going to get it done in 2 months when it's taking you 13 years. No, I promise you 2 months. I said, tell you what, I'm going to give you three. Let me just tell you something. If it's not done in three, I'm going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Well, sure enough, we got to 3 months, and he didn't have it done. And people in the State Department of Transportation say, please, please, please don't fall on him. He's really trying to get it done, trying to get it done. I said, okay, if it's not done by July the 23rd, that's it. July the 23rd came, didn't have anything. So I picked up the phone, called the Secretary of Transportation. And they said, he's not here. And I said, that's fine, I'll wait. Well, they said he's not here. I said, I understand, I'll hold. And so they got one of the undersecretaries on the phone. They said, we know why you're calling. If we promise to get the secretary to call you tomorrow, we accept that. I said, sure, but I'm calling tomorrow if he doesn't call me. Well, 9 o'clock the next morning, Secretary of Transportation calls me. He says, the approval's on my desk. I'm signing it as we speak. And he said, here's my personal cell phone number. I want to come down there. I want to get on top of this thing so we can get every one of your approvals done. And he did, okay? It started under the Obama administration, but we got it done. The other thing we need to do is try to get some federal money put into it. We got one of these federal infra grants. Senator Shelby played a key role in that. And well, we still have that grant, by the way. So we got all the federal approvals out of the way. We got all the federal roadblocks out of the way, and we put a bunch of federal money into it. And then late spring, early summer, we hit this snag because we had the head of the State Department of Transportation down here telling people you're going to have to pay an exorbitant fee to get across that toll, to get across even if you're not on the new span, if you're on the I-10 span that exists right now, we're going to make you pay a toll. Well, that was dumb. That was just dumb. And it was not going to work. And it caused a firestorm. And so you had the state folks on one side and local officials on the other side, while these federal approvals and federal money are all just sitting there. So the state folks and the local folks have got to get their act together, or we'll lose the grant. That would be a shame. That would be a real shame, because we need that span. There's no question about it. It probably needs to be a lot more reduced in scope than what the state was originally proposing, so that we can afford it. But time's a wasting here. We need to get this done.
You know, people have talked to me from a state level and said they don't feel like, because of bad blood, this, that, or the other, that there'll be another bite of the apple while KIV is still governor of the state of Alabama.
I don't agree with that. I really don't agree with that. I don't think the State Department of Transportation, the transportation director, handled this well at all. He handled it very, very, very poorly. But I think they'll get him out of the way. And I think the governor, her chief of staff, Joe Bonner, my gosh, lives in Montrose, you know, lived in Mobile for a long time. I mean, he certainly understands the need to get this done. I think we can get this done. And it's got to become a priority for everybody. And if there are hurt feelings out there, everybody needs to get over their hurt feelings. You know, we don't have time for hurt feelings on stuff like this.
Right. Another perennial that you and I have talked about over your time in Washington, watching, the congressman knows exactly where I'm going. And that's Red Snapper and the federal fist on this and trying to open it up some and free some, free the state to make some decisions here. Talk about that process.
Yeah. You know, when I first got there, I've forgotten what the I think we were down to, what, a week or something like
that?
Yeah,
it was
a very short period of time. And I, as the new guy from the Gulf Coast, just assumed that there was some other congressman working on it. And then I found out that nobody was. So I realized, okay, Byrne, that means you got to do it. So we picked it up and had, you know, our snapper bill that we put in, which started pushing things. And we got no relief from the National Marine Fisheries Services, where the career official there was just a big part of the problem. But we kept pushing. President Trump came in office, got a different Secretary of Commerce, because that's where this all lies, and the people that work under him on these things. And we got all the Gulf Coast congressmen together, and Steve Scalise played a huge role here. And we were able to get them to come up with what's called an emergency rule that first year. and which gave us those three-day weekends, which is, I'll never forget, we were sitting in the conference room right off the House floor, and the Undersecretary of Commerce for Policy or something like that was sitting there, and members of Congress were just railing on him. And the poor guy was just, like, exasperated. He couldn't get a word in edgewise. He finally turned to me and said, "What do you want?" I said, "3-day weekends from Memorial Day through Labor Day." Another congressman said, and 4th of July week. And he said, "If I get that for you, is that good?" I said, "Yeah." Well, they worked and worked and worked and put it all together. And I got the word early on a Wednesday or Thursday morning that it was coming out that morning. And, like, right after it, I got a text message from Steve Scalise. "It's coming, man. It's coming." I said, "That's great." And an hour later, Steve Scalise was nearly killed by a gunman.
Yeah.
And on a baseball field. And I'm told that when he came to 3 or 4 days later after all those surgeries, the first words out of his mouth was, "Did we get the snapper regulation done?"
That's you've told that story, and that that shows that there were at least a contingent of y'all all hands on deck trying to explain it to somebody from Wyoming or Wisconsin, you know, or somewhere else in the country. And getting that done, it was a major lift. But you mentioned Representative Scalise. Let's talk about that. You've talked about him a bunch. Would you consider yourself friends outside of outside of Congress?
Oh, yeah. Little secret, he comes over here to play a lot.
So, there's a lot of Louisiana tags over here at the beach.
He's one of those Louisiana folks that's over here. I'm not going to disclose where he goes because that's private thing, but he's over here a lot. We fish together.
We've done
a lot of stuff in Washington together. I used to have, and this actually was started by Sonny Callahan, I used to have a fundraiser in Washington every fall where we bring up the Wenzel's folks to cook fresh seafood for those folks, and real seafood for those folks in Washington. And people just loved it. Steve Scalise would come every time. He would take off his coat, it's like an athletic contest. He would eat everything. And be the happiest person in the room. I actually saw him last night. We were on the flight out of Washington to Atlanta together, and I was watching him move around. Of course, he has to have security with him. He has his own security detail. And I thought, this guy is a pure miracle.
Yeah,
he should be dead.
Yes,
and he should be paralyzed.
Yep,
and he's neither. And got that big smile on his face, positive, upbeat attitude. What a blessing he is to have as a member of our leadership, and what a blessing he is to be a friend of mine.
Well said. Other friends, have you developed friendships in your time in Washington that you think will carry forward for you even when you're not there?
Oh, sure. One of my best buddies is Liz Cheney, and she is really something. It's funny. When she first got to Congress 4 years ago, I thought, former vice president's daughter, she's not going to want to associate with somebody lowly like me, you know. We ended up both on the Rules Committee together and both on the Armed Services Committee together, which meant we spent an enormous amount of time together. And just found out that we had a whole lot in common. We're great friends, and you know, she's somebody she's a star, and she'll continue to be a star. Kevin McCarthy and I, Kevin sort of took me under his wing, I think, my first week there. He was the whip at the time, and I really have enjoyed working under his leadership. Kevin's a great leader, good guy. Been to this area a couple of times, and knows it and cares about it, wants to help, and he's going to be a tremendous help to Jerry Carl. He's already been a help to Jerry, and he'll continue to be a help to Jerry. But, you know, all these people from the Trump administration have been great to work with. Really good, smart people, want to do the right thing. And I'm sure we'll find ways that we continue to work together on important things in the future. So, I mean, the relationships in Washington will be the things that I'll miss the most. But I have 100% confidence that we'll continue to be doing things together in some way. I don't know what that'll be, but we'll continue to be doing important things somehow together.
You know, we talked about Snapper and Bridges and all these things, but I'd say even rising above that, with you bringing your specific talents, not just the talents we all get from being down here in coastal Alabama, but your specific talents to Washington, what you did for scholarship programs in the country and what's moved forward. Talk about that. I mean, that had to, be a major motivator for you coming from the track you did.
Yeah, you know, I got to admit that when I first got to Washington, I thought, you know, I sort of done the education thing. I was a labor employment attorney on the management side. I've kind of done the labor employment thing. I'm going to do something else. And the chair of the Education and Labor Committee at the time was a guy named John Klein, former Marine Corps colonel, who carried the football, the nuclear device for President Reagan. Pretty tough guy. He comes up to me on the floor of the House and says, you know, we have a hard time getting our members interested in our committee. And by the time we get them interested, they go on to another committee. And we finally get somebody in the House who is a former state school board member, former chancellor of post-secondary education for a state, and a labor employment attorney. And then he leaned way over on me and said, and that person doesn't want to be on our committee. So a week later, one of Speaker Boehner's people come up to me on the floor of the House and said, the speaker has just put you on the Education and Labor Committee. I said, gotcha. And I got to admit, after I'd been on the committee for a few weeks, I realized, okay, dummy, this is where your expertise is. You should have been here all along. So, and of course, the moment I got there, there were people that I knew from prior work that I've done who came to me and said, good, we're glad you're finally here because we've got some stuff for you to do. And it was like throwing a fish into water. I knew exactly what these issues are and knew how to deal with them and had already had a lot of relationships, although I've developed many, many, many more. And we've been able to work together, in some cases on a very wonderful bipartisan basis, to advance things in workforce training, to work with historically black colleges and universities, to find ways, and working with Secretary DeVos, who's been unfairly maligned. Working with her these last 4 years has been wonderful. She, too, is a great friend. You know, she came down here a couple of years ago, and I was the sponsor for President Trump's bill, her bill on school choice. And I just think all that work on education sort of brings me back to my roots. The reason I ran for public office in the first place is to try to improve education for everybody in America.
And that's what I thought when you were in that position in Washington. I said, that's being the right person at the right place. We're coming right back. More with Congressman Bradley Byrne and a retrospective on his time in Washington. We continue this discussion in just minutes.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, and continuing our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. That that title stays through, what's Sunday? When does the actual, how does that work? When is that actually, is it like at midnight that you're retired and it's Jerry Carl as our congressman?
Noon on January the 3rd.
Okay, so noon on January the 3rd is the official handoff. But obviously, this has been going on for a while, getting him ready for you know, the job of AL1's congressman, right? Y'all have been meeting?
Oh, yeah. We started back in the summer, and we've been updating it. We developed this memo that just lists various things that we're working on up there that pertain, you know, to this district. And he's had a full meeting with my legislative staff, many of whom are going to remain on his staff. I've been updating him as we've been going along, like, you know, on hurricane recovery stuff, et cetera. So, and we talked a few days ago, so it's a pretty good relationship, pretty good effort. He's pretty up to speed on everything. I don't think Jerry's going to miss a beat. I think he'll hit the ground running and be very effective at what we need for him to be effective at as our congressman.
Yeah, and those committee assignments are so key. And I would just I want you to talk about this because you talked about it way back when nobody else was. You were on the show with me so many times, and you were talking about China, yeah. What they're doing with their Navy, the buildup. And part of that, you know, people could have said, if they were going to be cynical, would say, well, that's Congressman Byrne, you know, making a case for Austell or making a case for but you were born out to be spot on.
Well, unfortunately, my first year in Congress, my first year on the Armed Services Committee, is when China started building those artificial islands out there in the South China Sea. But even before that, when I was sitting through these many, many classified briefings on what they were doing, like what they were doing in space, it just scared the heck out of me. And knowing that I was pretty ignorant about China, I sort of drove my staff crazy. So we got books and studies and papers, and I got individual briefings to try to just make sure I understood it better. And it was pretty darn clear what we were up against. And I was given the opportunity to actually go to China, to go to Beijing, and see a lot of it for myself. And it's real clear. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party dominates that country, and it is their stated goal to be the power, not a power, the power in the world by their 100th anniversary in 2049. And they've taken concrete economic steps and concrete military steps to get themselves there. And it is imperative. I know the president's harped on this a lot, and he's right. It is imperative that we push back against them, because a world dominated by China is not a world that's good for America.
It is. A couple last questions. This one, would you do it again? If you take yourself back to that special election, that you know, that primary, would you do it again?
Absolutely. I've loved it. I really have. No, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
And of course, that dovetails with the question I've asked you. Somebody, I see interviews you've done as of late with all these Johnny come latelys and print media and TV, and they're coming around. It's like, hey, I've been asking the congressman this question. I would have been mad if you'd given them an answer you hadn't given me. But of course, I'm going to ask you like I do every time. What's next? What's next for you, Congressman?
Well, I think I'll step away from public life for a time, maybe forever, but at least for a time, because I think it's important for people in these positions not to get, you know, like they own them. And I'll see. I'll see if there's anything in public life that I'll do. So I have made the decision not to do anything up in Washington. A lot of congressmen, you know, sort of stay in Washington and do stuff up there. I talked to some headhunters and talked to some various entities where, you know, we might have worked something out, but the more I thought about it, I'm more thinking about quality of life. And my quality of life is so much better here than it would be up there. So whatever I do, I'll probably be down here for some period of time. And if it turns out that I'm here forever not being public life, that's cool too, because this is a great place to live. And I like to get out snapper fishing. Maybe I get to do that more often. I'm going to be able to do a little bit of hunting over the next few days. I'm looking forward to that. Most importantly, I get to spend a lot more time with my family, which I've missed a lot of time with my family these last 7 years. And that's been, you know, like the biggest downer, is that you just can't spend that much time at home. But we'll see. There may be something else out there, or there may not be.
So grandchildren, some time in the woods, some tractor work maybe in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. You and I have talked. I'll phone about my new Kubota tractor that I spend a lot of time on, and I love that thing. But it's also been time down here to appreciate just what a gift we have to live in this great area. This is a wonderful place to live.
You think time in Washington reinforced that for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's exciting to be in a big city in Washington, and you're a congressman, and, you know, all these things are happening, and that's okay. But it's really better down here. I mean, we've got such a high quality of life here. I mean, if you're into the stuff that I'm into, if you like to be in the woods and around the water, there are very few places in the world that can beat where we are, but it's also the people. We have such great people down here. I'll never forget, a CBS Morning News crew came down to follow me one day when I was doing town halls in the rural part of my district. And I was apprehensive about having CBS follow me around, because, you know, they can make you look bad and all that. But at the end of the day, the crew turned to me and the reporter turned to me and said, these are some of the nicest people we've ever met in our lives. And they said, even the people that disagree with you were so nice. I said, yeah, that's how we roll down here. And they did about a 4-minute segment on it that made this part of Alabama look really good, because that's who we are. And I think we shouldn't ever take for granted the fact that there's such good people around here. Maybe not the fanciest people in the world, maybe not the most powerful people in the world, certainly not the richest people in the world, but we're rich in the stuff that really matters, and being around people like that has been great for me. I was at the grocery store earlier today, and a lady came up to talk to me about something, and I thought, what a wonderful compliment it is to me that she feels comfortable enough just walking up and talking to me like that. And Why would I live somewhere where I don't get to do that?
There it is. And what a great testament to where we live from AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. As always, thanks for being here, and best of luck going forward.
Thanks, Sean. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.